Guys, this is a little post-recording emergency edition because I recorded this episode yesterday. I was ready to edit it and put it out in a few hours, but I woke up today and there was some emergency news that I just felt like I needed to react to. So here's a new intro and then we'll get into the main show in a minute. I woke up and checked Instagram and I saw that Erica Jayne has thrown Garcelle's new memoir. I don't know what the fuck it's called, but she threw the book in the trash where it belongs. You guys have no idea how obsessed I am because you guys know I love Erica Jayne. You know that I actually don't hate Garcelle. You know what's funny? You'll hear coming up, I talk about the Beverly Hills trailer, right? And I realize I didn't even mention Garcelle or Sutton. I like forget they even exist unless I see them on screen, like being shady and everything. But anyway, Erica put that book in the trash. Now, she put it on her Instagram. She filmed herself throwing it out. That book deserves to be in the trash because it's full of shade. And Garcelle, as usual, has taken shady shots at the women to promote herself and to make herself look good. And now her book has ended up in the bin, where it's going to be in 3 weeks anyway when it hits the bargain bin. So if you listen to me, you probably would have already heard like a few episodes ago that Garcelle actually shades Teddy in the book. She misspells her name like on purpose. So I think she spells it with a Y instead of an I. She knows how the fuck Teddy's name is spelled. And the book goes through like editors and copy, you know, sub editors, all of that stuff. So even though Garcelle probably didn't write this herself, she would have had a ghostwriter and she probably just sat down with the ghostwriter over lunch and told her some stories and the ghostwriter whipped it up together. They know how to spell Teddy's name. So she's shading Teddy just like for what? Like Teddy did nothing to you, you psycho. That's one of the worst things Garcelle has done just because that was so obviously like, we know the audience hates you, Teddy, so I'm just going to like throw shade at you. And if it was a one-off, it would be okay, but because she does that shit all the time, like, that's when it gets super annoying. And we know that she shaded Erica Jayne before. She shaded Erica Jayne on The Real, which is now being cancelled, but she shaded her during filming. That was very calculated to get a reaction out of Erica, and judging by the trailer, I think she got it. So Garcelle loves to play these little games, and then she went on Instagram to promote her book, and she kind of made like an Erica Jayne reference. It wasn't that deep, but I guess it struck a nerve with Erica because then Erica went on her Instagram and was like, here's your book in the fucking trash. I love that Erica does not care about the audience perception, like how the audience are perceiving her at all, because we all know that Garcelle is this like untouchable fan favorite, and Erica's like, bitch, I don't give a fuck. How many fucks does she give? Zero. She said it in the song, like she lives those songs. I know she didn't write those songs, they were very manufactured, they were paid for with the money of, you know, orphans and widows and whatever, but she lives that lifestyle, guys. Now people are very upset that in her bin she doesn't recycle. People have pointed that out. Oh my God, Erica Jayne, she's not recycling. Well, who cares? Because I don't recycle either. Okay, I recycle sometimes, but I'm going to be honest, I'm not going out of my way to recycle. If the recycling bin is right there, will I put, you know, like the paper packaging, whatever in there? Yes, I will. But I don't recycle if I, like sometimes I don't know what is for the recycling or what's for the main bin. So if I don't know, I'm like, I'm not going to waste like 10 minutes trying to figure it out. So everything will go in the main bin. If the recycling bin is like somewhere else and I don't know about it, like I'm not going to turn my life upside down to recycle like a can of like Coca-Cola. Like I'm just not. I also am not leaving like empty milk cartons and milk bottles on like the kitchen bench, like waiting to put them in the recycling bin. Have you seen how fucking people do that? It's like the recycling bin like isn't there for some reason. It's not there. It hasn't been taken out or it's full or whatever. So instead of like taking the recycling out and or going out to like your bin outside to throw out your milk bottle, people will like leave it on the benches in like, well, this is for the recycling for later. It's like, put it in the bin. Like it doesn't go on the bench. Like you're not going to leave trash out in the kitchen area, in the public area, and earmark it for recycling later. Like it goes in the bin. I don't care what bin. I don't care if it goes in the fucking compost. I don't care if it goes in the recycling. I don't care if it goes in the main bin. Like it's going in the bin. So who cares? Recycling, it's just, I just find recycling's a lot. I just can't be bothered, honestly. Like, it's just too much. And I don't understand how you know. Like, how do you even know what goes in what bin? I'm just like, I get confused. I'm just over it. You know what else I hate about taking out the trash? Okay. The worst. Okay, first of all, let me just give you my thoughts. I want to give you my thoughts on throwing out trash. So one person is not dedicated to throwing out trash. Whoever fills up the bin throws it out. And don't be lazy and keep trying to like stuff things in there when it's already full. Like, you know, in your heart of hearts, in your soul, when the bin is full, like, you know, when to fucking take that shit out. And maybe sometimes take it out when it's not even completely full, like a preemptive strike, like just get it done now because it's going to be filled by the next person. So you may as well take it out now and put a new bin. So no one is like dedicated to taking out. It's not like someone's job. Because I know they say men have to take out the trash. Bitch, if you're a woman and you filled the bin and it's filled to the brim and you can't put anything else in there and your man is like, whatever, out picking up the kids from school, like, take it out. Like, don't just leave it there. So that's really annoying. And the other thing that is like so fucked up with like taking out the trash is when someone takes it out, right, but they don't put a new plastic bag in the bin. Like, they don't put a new bin liner in. They just leave it there. So it's like they could be bothered taking the bin out, but it's like too much of an effort to like go under the kitchen sink and like grab a new plastic bag, a new bin liner and put it in. That is the worst. Someone did that here the other day and I'm like, I just started like, I just throw trash in there like without the bin liner then. I'm like, well, you can fucking clean the bin out. If you're that lazy that you can't put a fucking bin liner in there, that is insane to me. Like, that is actually crazy. Oh my God, if I was dating someone and they took the bin out and they didn't put a new bin liner in, like, I would throw them out in the fucking trash because that is so lazy on such a, like, psychotic level. Like, how can you have the energy to take the whole bin out but you're not going to put a fucking liner in there? So it's just whatever. So who cares if Erica Jane recycles or not? I don't give a shit. I'm sure she recycles sometimes. She's like me. And by the way, you don't recycle all the time, so stop acting like you recycle literally 150% of the time. You're saying you never ever put something in like the main bin that was meant for recycling. You 100% do, so I don't want to hear it. And Garcelle's book, by the way, it's going to flop because I've seen the cover art. Like, you just see the vibe of it and it doesn't scream bestseller. Like, it doesn't at all. It's like, it reminds me of like when Bachelor Stars, every Bachelor Star has a book deal now, and some of them are bestsellers. Like, if you're like a, you know, one of the top Bachelor Stars, like Hannah Brown, Alabama Hannah, like, you'll probably get a bestseller. But then there's like mid-tier Bachelor Stars that put out books that totally flop. That's what Garcelle is. And The Real has been cancelled, by the way. So all the annoying Garcelle stans that are like, oh my God, she's booked and busy. Like, she's doing The Real. She doesn't need Beverly Hills. Well, it was cancelled. And actually, it was cancelled like not that long after she joined. So clearly she's not ratings gold. Clearly she's not carrying the Housewives of Beverly Hills like you guys try to say. Like, Erica Jane's carrying the show. The whole fucking trailer was about Erica Jane. The trailer last year was about Erica Jane. Like, the trailer before that was about Denise Richards. Like, Garcelle's not carrying anything. Like, no one cares. Anyway, I'm getting into the main episode now. I just had to like give you my thoughts on that. So yeah, enjoy. Bye. Well, not bye. Because, I mean, you're going to hear from me in like 2 seconds. We're continuing things. Hey, guys. Welcome back to Unpopular. This is Shark, and I've been scammed. I feel like I'm at an AA meeting. Like, this is Shark, and I'm the victim of scamming. So you guys know that I love Candy and the Gang, right? I've been gushing about it. I don't think any of you are watching it because I saw the recent ratings. They were so bad. Like, it had like 300,000 viewers. Like, it was that fucking bad. But it's a really good show. And there is a guy on it called Torin, and I love him. Like, I have such a crush on him. On the show, they talk about how he has a huge dick. Like, that's kind of a thing because this other guy was like, well, I couldn't have sex with him because his dick was so big. For the record, I actually liked him before I knew about that. Like, obviously that was a plus, but I was not aware of the size of his package before I liked him. I just think he's really cute and he's funny. He's got a job. He's tall. You know what? That's all it takes for me is tall and you have a job, and then that's it. That's all I care about. So I just think he's really cute. So I've had a crush on him the whole time. And like, if you follow me on Instagram, which you should at UnpopularJP, I like to recap the shows that I'm watching as I watch them. And I would like always film him and tag him like, oh my God, Torrin's so cute. And then last week he announced that he was joining OnlyFans. Now, when I saw this, I was shook to my core because I'm like, this is incredible. Like, this is everything I've ever wanted. Actually, I felt a little conflicted because I will say that the Torrin that I fell for on Candy and the Gang wasn't someone that I would expect to do OnlyFans. So I did kind of think like, you know, this isn't like, I thought you were like wife material and now you're doing OnlyFans. So maybe you're not wifey material. Maybe you're just, you know, one night only. It is what it is. But did I lose a little bit of respect? Yes. But am I going to turn down a chance to like sign up and, you know, have all my dreams come true? No, I'm not. And on the show, actually, there was a scene where he was, because he's an interior designer, by the way, and this is important to know for this fucking scam that I'm going to tell you about. He's an interior designer. Well, actually, he works at Candy and the Gang, but on the side, he works at the Old Lady Gang restaurant, but on the side, he's a budding interior designer. And he gets brought in to kind of help do this guy's apartment on the show. And the guy wants like a, I don't know, it's like some kind of wardrobe to keep his sex toys or something like that. And Torrin's like, that's not my brand. Like, I don't do that. Like, he doesn't want to do something tacky like that. So when he did announce he was doing OnlyFans, I was a little shocked. I was like, this isn't the Torrin that, you know, I fell in love with, but it is what it is. So I was so excited to sign up to this OnlyFans, and he was teasing it for like a week. He'd be like, you know, 3 days left until my OnlyFans launches. And he was posting teaser photos that would be like him shirtless, like they looked like Grindr photos. Like he would be shirtless in front of the bathroom mirror with his phone, and then there would be like a devil emoji around his crotch. So I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm gonna see it. And then he launches the OnlyFans, and the URL, like his username on there, is Toolbelt Torrin, and he's talking about like, you're gonna see the tool. Obviously we know what the tool is. So it's very expensive, right? Because most OnlyFans are kind of, I would say, on average for like porn stars and everything, it's more like $8 to $12. I was thinking that Torrin, just because he's on TV, it was going to be a little pricier because reality stars and like celebrities that join usually charge more. And it was $20. And then with the conversion fee and everything being in Australia, it ended up costing more. But of course, I'm like, bitch, I'm going to be the first person signing up. So I pay my like $20-something. I get in there. Every photo on his OnlyFans is just interior design photos. Like not even like an underwear selfie or a shirtless selfie, not even a fully clothed selfie. It's just pictures of him, of the houses, like empty rooms on interior design jobs that he's on. And this is 100% a scam. Now, it's not unusual to sign up for a celebrity's OnlyFans, right? And then to get the same kind of content you would see on like Instagram. Like a lot of people are known for doing that on OnlyFans, right? And that's why I never usually would sign up for a celebrity's OnlyFans. Like my advice to you, and I've given this advice many times before, if you're going to join, like follow someone on OnlyFans, make sure it's like a porn star, and then you're going to get everything. You know, you're going to pay one price and they're going to like, you know, they're going to mention it all. Like it's all going to be out there. But if you're trying to sign up for like Harry Jowsey or some bullshit, you know, someone from Love Island, like they're probably just going to be in a bikini. Like it'll just be like Instagram level stuff. It's not worth the price unless you're some loser that, you know, wants a chance to message with them, you know, because they do that. By the way, they're not actually responding to their messages. Like if they're a small creator, maybe, but if it's like someone bigger, like, you know how Larsa Pippen was on Housewives of Miami and she was acting like she chats to everyone on OnlyFans? She doesn't. They outsource companies and then the companies respond to all the DMs. But anyway, it's not unusual to get scammed on OnlyFans. But when I tell you, this guy, Torrin, he was teasing the OnlyFans for a week with like half-naked photos, Toolbelt Torrin. Like he was 1,000% giving you the impression that you were going to see the D. And I was like, I was kind of surprised because when someone joins OnlyFans, sometimes they won't give you everything straight away. And Torrin's only been on, my Instagram, because I'm trying to get his page up. Torrin, wait, let me get this up. Yeah, Torrin's only been on Candy and the Gang. It's been like 4 episodes. So I kind of thought this is a little early for you to be, you know, getting your gear off. But I was like, hey, maybe he needs the money. Happy to be a sugar daddy. Cough up that $20 and it's beyond. Wait, I'm getting up his page now, okay? because I just couldn't believe it. Photos of empty houses. Yeah, his username is ToolBeltTorrin, and then he had something, come and see what's in my tool belt. Girl, if you say come and see what's in my tool belt, of course I'm thinking you're talking about your tool. I don't think you're actually talking about a fucking hammer and a screwdriver, which is what I got. And I'm not the only one upset about this because I looked at the comments on one of his interior design photos. This is what people were writing. This shit is not cool at all. You scam people out of $20. That's the last $20 you'll get from me. You literally scammed us. I've unsubscribed. And it is really shady. Like, you can laugh and be like, you were paid a sucker trying to sign up to someone's OnlyFans, but this was absolutely false advertising. And you know what? I tried to put a positive spin on it because if you listen to my Patreon, which you should, so sign up $5 a month, much cheaper than Torrin's OnlyFans. I'm not naked on there, but you will get more of me. If you listen to my Patreon, you know that I'm going through a whole design thing with my new house and trying to pick things out and whatever. I hate it, but I was like, okay, maybe I'll get some design inspo. Like, let's see the glass half full and maybe there'll be some, like, nice tips in here for things that I can do to my house. Girl, his style, it's fucking disgusting. I was going to be nicer about it because I do like Torrin and I was going to, like, not shit on his style. But now I'm just thinking, like, no, actually, you did scam me. So I will say the truth about your style. It's hideous. It's very blinged out. It's like silver House of Darion wallpaper, mirrored furniture, fake plants, silver and gold everywhere. And then he has, like, some modern farmhouse things too. And the modern farmhouse is hideous with, like, Kmart lampshades. Atrocious. Like, I don't know if that's the style in Atlanta, because on Candy and the Gang, there's this other girl, Safari, and she does, they're not butt injections. It's like a butt vacuum. So they vacuum your butt and then it sticks out more, but I'm guessing it's a temporary effect that probably lasts like 3 hours and then your booty goes back down. They did it to Mama Joyce, who's like 72, and she got down in a G-string and was getting a butt procedure. I've got to say, Mama Joyce, she had a really great ass and amazing legs. I was like, holy shit, like, black doesn't crack, because her legs looked younger and smoother and more toned than mine. And she's like 50 years older than, no, not 50 years, 40 years older than me. So yeah, don't sign up to Torrin's OnlyFans. We hate Torrin now. And I hate my house. Oh my God, I feel like I made so many wrong choices, because when, it's not the interior designer faults, it's not her fault, by the way, because I got an interior designer in just for one consultation. But when I went in with her, I really didn't know what I was asking for. Like, cause I just didn't know anything about design or anything. And that was like, I don't know, 2 months ago. And since I met with her, like, I've just been watching interior design videos all the time, like Googling different furniture and like paint. And now all of my targeted ads on social media, like Instagram, they're all interior design stuff. So now I have like way more of an idea of like what I like and what I feel like works and what I would want. And I feel like I just feel like I've made the wrong decisions. It's being painted right now. The paint will be like finished tomorrow. I'm holding off getting the floor because I've actually cancelled the flooring because I'm like, no, I hate it. So, you know, it's depressing, but whatever. It's whatever. I'll just live in squalor. What else? Okay, so the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills trailer is out. It's really good. Kathy Hilton and Erica Jane are definitely in the hot seat. I think we already know about the Kathy stuff. If you've been listening to me, you should. If you listen to Zach Peter, you should. Like, we know that she called someone a faggot and I don't know. There's a lot of stuff, but we don't know what's actually they're actually going to include in there. And I've heard a lot of things that I can't repeat, but, you know, I don't think it's going to be good for Kathy. If they show everything, maybe they won't. Who knows? Erica Jane is like drinking and boozing because I guess all of the backlash has got to her and she's like angrier than ever. I love it. Like in the trailer, you hear her and she goes, what about the victims? What about the facts? Like she's like, fuck y'all. Like we're talking about the truth here. I just love that she is so unapologetically herself. She does not care about putting on a show to become likable to the fucking Karens that are watching at home. Oh my God. Wait, do you want to hear from my mum? You can. I'm going to answer this fucking call. Wait. Sorry, guys. My mum just called. I was going to actually play the conversation for you because I let it record, but I just had to cut it out because we were talking about financials and my banking details to pay the painter, and it was just like not podcast talk. Anyway, where was I about how amazing Erica Jane is? Erica Jane is the best. So you're stupid because... Okay, you know how I made a big deal about how, like, the double standard of people liking Jen Shah and hating Erica Jane? Like, seeing the trailer really just crystallized it because it's like, Erica is just truly reacting to how she feels in the moment. She doesn't give a fuck what some dumb fucking Karen at home that drank three bottles of wine before bed on a fucking Tuesday night thinks. Like, she doesn't care. She's just doing her, whereas Jen Shah has put on this whole show doing fake charity. Remember, she's doing charity work on there? Fake tears, fake sob stories, just because she thinks the audience will like it. And then the audience are so fucking stupid, they fall for it. Oh, she's showing, like, empathy. Like, she's showing compassion. Like, again, Erica wasn't charged with anything. There's some new charge on her now. What are these fucking fake-ass lawsuits? Whatever. So Erica's amazing. And one reason that I really like Erica, and I was kind of thinking about it, I really love people in general that create the life that they want for themselves, because not everyone can do that. Like, you need to kind of have, like, you've got to have a stomach of steel to be able to really go out there and hustle and social climb and make it to the level. And because you're sitting at home, right, from a little, you're a little girl and you're like, I want to be rich, I want to be famous, I want this and this. And those things are not hard to achieve. Like, we know that Erica went to New York at 27, left everything behind, left her kid with the father, which there is a double standard with that, because again, when a dad does that, no one cares, because she did. I mean, I'll be honest, it is kind of worse if you're a mom, because a mother and a child bond is different to a father and a child. I mean, you need both, but whatever, it is what it is. Anyway, she went out there, she was a cocktail waitress hustling, she met Tom fucking Girardi, and she would have met a wealthy, powerful man at some point. Like, that was clearly her goal. And then she got that lifestyle, then she was able to become like this pop star because she always wanted to be a performer. She was able to make that come true, then she was able to come on The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, and now she's just keeping it all the way real with this trial, if you believe what she says, and not giving a fuck what anyone thinks. And I've always liked that about people. Like, I love that about Lana Del Rey. Like, Lana Del Rey created, I mean, her real name was like Lizzie Grant. Like, she, and I feel like she was like the first person to get lip fillers. Not the first, but she was one of the first people to do that. Before everyone was getting lip fillers, she was kind of like one of the OGs of lip fillers. And she came out and created this whole other persona for herself. And now she lives this life that she probably always dreamed about, which is this life of this artist and a creative. And, you know, she's famous and she's influential and she's important, but she's not a fame whore. She'll pop up at the, like, Chateau Marmont every now and then. Sometimes you'll see her on a red carpet, and then she goes away and lives her free artist lifestyle, you know, publishing a poetry book or writing a new album, you know, doing whatever. Like, she has the life that she wanted for herself, and so does Erica. Well, Erica didn't want the life up to here where she's been, like, sued and all of that. But you guys, you know what I mean. You know who else made the life that they wanted? Rita Ora. Now, Rita Ora sucks. Like, she's not talented. She's very attractive, which is how she was able to do what she did. And the reason she's so hot is because she's not, like, generically hot, and she's not, like, perfect, but she just is, like, really attractive in kind of a way that stands out, kind of a striking way. And I used to cover Rita Ora when she first, you know, back when I was doing music blogging and stuff and I had my blog, and Rita Ora first came out, and she was so fucking fake and astroturfed, and, like, I don't know how, like, I don't know, she did something to get that record deal. I don't know what it was. Like, if you told me that the Albanian mafia, like, paid money to the record label to get her a deal, like, I would believe you. Like, there's nothing that I wouldn't believe with this chick. And then when her music career wasn't taking off, she just started dressing in the most ridiculous outfits. Like, she's basically copying Rihanna, because that's when Rihanna was coming up as a fashion icon. So Rita Ora was totally just like the fucking B-grade Rihanna. And she would call the paps everywhere she went, and she looked like a fucking idiot, but it was like fake it till you make it, because eventually she kept coming out in these like overstyled outfits and getting photographed at the right place at the right time. And it was like, she kind of convinced people that she was a style icon, even though she wasn't. And then I guess at some point she became important enough to like where designers really did want to work with her and dress her and like give her great clothes. And she started getting like makeup deals and commercial deals over in the UK. And she takes every single job she gets offered. Like, she's had big things in the industry. She's had shitty jobs. Like, she works here in Australia. She does The Voice. I think she has like The Voice or X Factor. I don't watch any of those horrible shows, but she hosts one of them. She does different shows like that around the world. I remember she hosted some tacky like MTV show about finding the next big boy band, but she just is always working, always hustling. Like, she probably makes so much fucking money at this point, because she's just like, she's the definition of booked and busy. And now she's dating that, I can't pronounce his name. He directs like Marvel movies. He's from New Zealand. Like, he's like YTT or something. She's with him. He's like a big shot in Hollywood now. When she got in fucking 50 Shades of Grey, which I don't even know how she even got in that. Like, she's in movies. She's in like big movies. And she has like no talent, and she's actually like an actress. And I think she had like a 2 minute, actually 2 minute is probably generous. I think she had a 25 second part in one of the 50 Shades of Grey films. And then she was like out there media playing off of that, like she was Angelina Jolie. You have to admire the hustle, and you have to admire that she wanted something for herself. And she has like the fucking fortitude and the stamina and the mindset that she can go out there and get it, just like Lana Del Rey, just like Erica Jane, just like a lot of other people. So we love that. Back to the trailer. The new housewife, Diana Jenkins. Okay. She looks like she's going to bring the drama in the trailer. I'm excited for her, but already the social media accounts, the Bravo fan accounts, are popping up talking about her sordid past, going, she was a madam. This is not new information. I actually exposed this God knows how many months ago, right here on my fucking podcast. And I went right into her past of this whole madam thing, which I can barely even remember what I said in that episode, because it was months ago, because I just like say it and then I forget it. But I'm pretty sure that her being a madam, it was like made up. It was from that Crazy Days and Nights blog, like one post, and then people tried to, you know, and that they post stuff that's not accurate all the time. So, but there was other stuff about Diana Jenkins that I covered in that episode, like this thing about her being a Karen and when she was selling her mansion, and then she chopped down the neighbor's trees or something so she could have like a view for the ocean, then it would increase the value on her mansion, and they were in like a dispute over it. Anyway, I got into all of that, and I do remember at the time I was thinking, oh, this episode's going to do really well, because Diana Jenkins, like, she'd just been confirmed for the show. So I went out and I did my like deep dive on her and read all these articles and like got it all together about the madam thing, dispelling rumors, finding out new things about her that people weren't talking about. You know, everyone's obsessed with The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. So I'm like, everyone's going to love this episode. And like, I remember it didn't do that well. I mean, I guess maybe it was like too early for that, but I just felt like with the kind of level of involvement people have with Beverly Hills in particular, people would want to know all about who the new girl was. But I guess it's not relevant until the trailer's out or the season premieres, whatever. But no one cared. And now I'm seeing all the Bravo fan accounts coming out with their like receipts and their old stories on her. It's like, honey, like, we did that here 5 months ago. And if you were listening to me, you would already know it. Like, I do everything before everyone. Like, I did the Julia fucking with her murdered baby, whatever that was, murdered husband. No, well, they were both murdered, the baby and the husband. Anyway, I did that before anyone. Back when I was a blogger, I did everything before everyone, and everyone fucking copied me. It's true. Like, Lana Del Rey, again, to bring up Lana Del Rey, like, she followed me on Twitter and something else, because I was like the first person to write about her, and like no one gave a fuck. Like, yes, I was. And then she became like the cultural icon of her era. Like, I am on things before other people, and like people just need to understand that. Like, There was so much that I did back in that day that I forget about. Like, I don't know. I just did a lot of stuff. I did a whole thing with PlayStation reached out to me and got me to do like a music playlist for them. They had this like online thing at the time that was like this worldwide. What was it? It was some like video streaming platform thing that they did, and they wanted me to like, as from my blog, do like a playlist for them, and it went like worldwide. And I got all that shit without even trying because I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. Like, I was like depressed 20 in my bedroom. I didn't understand about like building a brand or like monetizing things. Like, this stuff just kind of like fell in my lap without me even trying. Anyway, I'm onto this shit before everyone. So just like fucking listen to the podcast. Don't ask me stupid questions. Oh my God. Someone asked me the other day, this is on Instagram. What's your thoughts on Teresa? What do you think my fucking thoughts on Teresa are? Like, listen to my Patreon, listen to the podcast. I've talked about it many times. Like, what are you doing? It's so annoying. Like, oh my, I can't. Okay, babe, back to the trailer. Look, Crystal's doing an eating disorder storyline. I've got to say, this storyline would be very compelling if I didn't just watch it on The Real Housewives of New Jersey with Jackie. I think two of the exact same very specific storyline in a row from one show to the other, it's a bit much. And I kind of feel bad for Crystal because it's like, obviously that's what's going on in her life because she touched on it last season. It's been like a big thing for her. And I believe that it's going to be very authentic. But I don't know how much people want to watch it after having to watch Jackie do it all on New Jersey. Oh my God. And they're giving Lisa Rinna the villain edit as always, because she's exposing that fucking overrated whack job, Kathy Hilton. Again, another fan fave, another one that was crowned a fan fave by Twitter, and now they're about to be exposed. Just wait for the receipts to come out on Kathy Hilton, especially the woke fans. That's all I'm going to say, because you can enjoy that. That's your girl. So on the trailer, they do this reaction shot of Lisa Rinna at the end. It's so out of context, in my opinion. So Kyle and Kathy are kind of fighting, and Kyle's like, how could you do this to me, Kathy? Like, it feels like you don't even like me. You know, I'm your sister. And then they show this shot of Lisa Rinna looking like she's sort of like smiling, like she's taking pleasure in like destroying their sisterly relationship. Lisa Rinna's not taking pleasure in destroying the relationship between two sisters. I'm telling you right now, that trailer was edited for Stan Twitter and the stupid fans online. That was a reaction shot that was out of context, I'm telling you now. If Lisa Rinna is having a gleeful expression, she's gleeful that Kathy Hilton is kind of like a horrible person in real life, and that Kathy Hilton was lauded as a fan favorite last year for saying hunky-dory, which wasn't even funny, and was probably scripted. That was fake. I believe that was fake. And she was putting on an act. And Rinna likes when fake people get fucking exposed for who they are. She's not glad that she's like ruining Kyle and Kathy's relationship. And if you actually think that, like, go outside, like, kick a football. Like, you're too invested in the show. You're too invested in like the Twitter version of who these characters are, because she's not a fucking monster. She's a queen. We love her. And I love that she just runs all these fake ass bitches off the show. Kim Richards, thieving, drug addict mess. Like, yes, did she have a sweet side? Yes. But everything Lisa Rinna said about her was fucking true. And she was close to death. I can't believe people think she wasn't close to death. If you're a girl, watch her cameos and tell me that she's not close to death. She's close to death. She's still close to death. She's been close to death for many years. I'm not saying I want her to die. I love her. I hope she gets help. I hope she gets it together. I hope she gets sober. I hope she gets close to health, but she's not close to health. She's a drug addict and has been for decades. It is what it is. Like, let's call it what it is. Lisa Vanderpump, don't get me started on that. Fakest, most manipulative, nastiest person. Denise Richards, we all know the tea on that. Rinna was right. If you still don't understand what happened with the, because people don't understand that storyline, they go, what? Why do they care that Denise was with another woman? That's not even what it was about. And if you think that's what it was about, you're stupid. And now she's taking care of Kathy Hilton. So I can't wait for it. Speaking of fakes and frauds being exposed, I am kind of loving this. Actually, no, loving is an exaggeration because I would have to be surprised by this to love it, which I'm not surprised at all because this is like old news. But the BLM founder, I think her name's Patrice Cullors, like she got busted with this like $6 million mansion. Basically, she's got this mansion. It's worth $6 million. And everyone's like, hang on, like, where's our money going? Like, you guys, how much money did Black Lives Matter raise over the last few years? And now you're like living in a mansion. And then there's like further questions about it because it goes beyond that. Because this mansion, right, it was sold for like $3 million to this guy. And he worked with Patrice, right? Some guy that was working under her or with her, whatever. He bought it first for like $3 million. And then he sold it like a week later for $6 million to Black Lives Matter Foundation directly. And then people are like, well, why did it suddenly go up $3 million in a week? Like, what is with that money? What, like, did you, I don't know, are you trying to pocket $3 million? There's a lot of questions. And this was exposed, I believe, by New York Magazine. So this is liberal mainstream media. This isn't like Project Veritas or Ben Shapiro or Fox News. Like, this is out and about in the liberal mainstream media. So we all know, like, where there's smoke, there's fire. There's something fishy going on. Like, I knew about this stuff for ages. And I remember at the height of, like, the BLM stuff, when it was, like, BLM was completely untouchable and you couldn't say anything negative about them. I remember, like, thinking to myself, and I don't think I really verbalized it. I may have verbalized on the podcast before. I can't remember because I was a little bit more careful about some of the things that I said back then, but because it was like the tensions were much higher at that point. But I remember thinking to myself, like, you can criticize like the organization without like, it doesn't mean you're automatically criticizing Black lives and Black people just because you criticize like this specific organization that's like run into the fucking bank. And this chick came out like last year, this Patrice chick, like New York Post, I believe, did a story about all the mansions, or the not mansions, but she basically had this like really extensive real estate portfolio. And what these people do, like, as soon as they get some money and some power, like, they're not putting the money back in a Black neighborhood. Like, they go and they buy a fucking big house in a rich, white, privileged neighborhood so they can bump into Gwyneth Paltrow at Whole Foods. Like, that's the truth. It's not just a race thing. Like, this happens with Me Too. This happens with Time's Up. This happens with all of them. Like, it's all a scam. Like, all of these social movements, yeah, they start off organic, but they just get co-opted and commercialized pretty quickly. Like, by the time you see the celebrities out there with their, like, pins and their flags and stuff, like, it's long gone. Like, don't give any of them your money. If you see a celebrity telling you to donate to something, don't do it, because it's just making some like shady person rich and it's a scam and they're taking your money. Like, guys, where do you think all your fucking money to Ukraine is going? Oh my God. If you've been donating to Ukraine, good for you, but I really hope you like investigated really specifically, like, the charity that your money is going to directly, and really understand 100% like where it's going, because it's going to come out at some point that that money has gone to places that like it shouldn't have been, because they're raising so much money now. And oh my God, 2 years from now, guys, it's not going to be cute. It's just all bullshit. And Leah McSweeney, actually, shout out to Leah McSweeney, because she actually exposed Me Too, like, way before Roni. People don't realize this, but like, before Roni, she was doing like podcasts, she was doing like social commentary and political commentary, and she did like a whole article and like interviews about it that was exposing all this stuff about, I think, the Time's Up organization, how it was co-opted to like make money selling fucking like pussy hats to libtards. So she exposed that back in the day. And Me Too's over now anyway. Me Too is cancelled ever since they failed to cancel Dave Portnoy. Like, that was the tipping point. Like, it reached like the peak of like absurdity when they came for Dave Portnoy with that stupid fucking story. And then when it didn't even work and it totally backfired, and like, I feel like it probably just made Dave Portnoy more famous and powerful. Like, it's over. Like, it's done. Anyway, the reason that I bring all of this up isn't just to randomly bash BLM. I don't really care. It's actually to talk about Kelly Dodd, because it just made me think when I saw the, you know, the stuff coming out about BLM and seeing it come out in like left-wing kind of mainstream media, okay, not just right-wing media, general mainstream media everywhere. I just thought of Kelly Dodd and I'm like, oh my God, I cannot believe that it was only, what, 2 years ago that tensions were so high about this stuff. and like we couldn't criticize anything, that she was like, she got so much shit for wearing that Drunk Wives Matter hat, which was literally, and I did defend her at the time because it was stupid. Actually, it was less than 2 years ago. I did defend her at the time over the hat thing specifically because it's like, clearly she's just at a bridal shower, which she was. She's at a bridal shower. Someone's given her like a lame novelty hat. She's put it on for a photo and it is what it is. Like, she wasn't like mocking Black Lives Matter. Like, I'm sure she doesn't like Black Lives Matter. I'm not delusional thinking she's like a fan and donating to them, but like that was not as deep as people made it. And it's just so funny that the uproar that that caused, and it really wasn't that long ago, the hysteria that that caused amongst like Bravo fans and everything, because she wore a fucking hat for 2 seconds. And now look at the stuff coming out about BLM. And this is only going to be the beginning. Like, yes, they're going to do like damage control. And I mean, with their millions of dollars, their hundreds of millions of dollars that they've raised, I'm sure they're like, have some like PR crisis firm trying to bury this, but like more is going to come out. And, we all owe Kelly Dodden a bit of an apology. She was right about the masks too, by the way. She was right about those fucking masks. And especially because she was really especially criticizing just those shitty cloth ones. And Andy was so rude to her at that reunion. And I even remember me at the time, I was thinking, oh, Kelly, like you sound so ignorant saying this. And now I'm like, oh my God, she was totally right about those masks. So, and when I end up interviewing Kelly Dodd at some point, I will be telling her this to her face. I'm going to be like, girl, you're right about it all, honey. You really were. Another thing about this BLM thing that's kind of funny too is that The Shade Room posted it. The Shade Room is like a really popular urban blog and like Instagram page. I don't know how many followers it has. It has millions. And wait, let me look it up now because I know it has a fucking lot of followers. I just want to tell you to make a point. The Shade. Get up here, Shade Room. 26 million followers. They posted the story about the BLM thing, this, you know, the scamming of it all, the $6 million mansion. And all the comments on that were like, yeah, you didn't know, like, this is old news. Like, they totally got it. They were like, this is bullshit. They were like, this is why you can't donate money to these causes or you've got to investigate it better. And of course, it's like Hollywood people and just like woke white people on social media that is like still trying to like defend this and like deflect from it. Whereas if you look at comments on Shade Room and stuff, they're like, yeah, we knew it was a scam. So the white Karens need to sit down as usual. What else have I got here? Oh my God. Speaking of BLM, did you guys hear our girl Ebony Williams on the Carlos King podcast? Oh my God. Another version, another example of people not fucking listening to me, getting messages, you should interview Carlos King, like everyone's saying that. I would love it if you talked to Carlos King. I did early on in my podcast, like one of my first big interviews. I think it's in the first 10 interviews, which actually, I don't even want people to listen to the early podcast episodes because I bet they're like so cringe and I hated the name of the podcast then and all that stuff, but whatever. We've come a long way. Anyway, I've interviewed Carlos before. It was a great interview. He now has his own podcast. It's doing really well. So far, it's only 2 episodes out. And he's keeping it very real on there. By the way, if you don't know who he is a producer. He produced The Real Housewives of Atlanta. He produced Jersey. He produced all of our like favorite seasons of these shows. And then he parted ways with Bravo to start his own production company. Now he does this. He works with Oprah's own network. So he has a franchise called Love and Marriage that's really popular now. And there's a new Love and Marriage coming out that has Monique from The Housewives of Potomac on it. So Monique's back on TV. But anyway, he's done his own podcast. He had Ebony on for the first episode. Now, he was not a fan of Ebony during her run on Roni. He keeps it pretty real. He keeps it very real. And he had her on and he kind of told her that. And then by the end of the interview, he ended up being like an Ebony stan, which was, anyway, I'm getting off track because my point about this interview with Ebony on Carlos King is it was the most unbearable thing I've ever heard, not from Carlos, from Ebony. She opens her mouth, I'm telling you, it's exhausting. Like, you feel exhausted listening to one sentence from her. She absolutely cannot return to Roni. I'm going to tell you why. You listen to this interview, she is a super fan in a way that you should not be this much of a fan and this invested and be on the show because it's never going to be natural. It's always going to be performative. She was quoting like the OC and old taglines. She was analyzing this on a level that to me has shown that she's been pacing up and down her Airbnb for the last 8 months, thinking about nothing but the show. And she's got this other show on CBS, this survival show, and I never fucking hear her talk about that. All she cares about is Roni. She's like talking about how the audience is going to perceive her, what her storyline's going to be next season, how Bravo should market the shows. Like it was just, it was minutia of minutia on a level that is like, it sounded like a Bravo podcaster the entire time. It sounded like a Bravo podcaster, someone that is even more invested in the shows than I am, or like Danny Pellegrino, or like even any like the big Bravo people. It was like someone that has never watched any other show except The Real Housewives in their life. All they do is talk about it. It's their whole life. And it's like, you can't have someone like that on the show. Like, it just doesn't work like that, guys. And I've met so many reality stars and people that are on these shows and housewives and stuff. And like, yes, they do think about the shows and everything, but most of them aren't invested to this level. Like, they're kind of living their life and then, you know, it is what it is. Like, they're not so into it. And when they are, like a Jill Zarin, like, it kind of backfires. Like, she was, I'm telling you right now, she was a level of, like, investment that was even more than Jill Zarin at her worst. Like, I couldn't believe it. And it was painful to listen to. She should be a Bravo podcaster, and I'm not even saying that a shade. When I was listening to that, I was like, okay, you clearly know everything about these shows and you think about them on a level that even most dedicated Bravo podcasters don't. I think your calling in life, Ebony, if you're not going to be like a professor or a preacher in the church, is to have your own pod, which she does have a podcast, but she needs to be a Bravo podcaster because she's clearly more invested in the housewives than any other topic, than politics and anything. And I actually was not that impressed with her on The View because I had said she should just go on The View. And she was annoying on there. And The View sucks anyway. Ebony, your calling is to do a Bravo podcast. You could be the queen of the like social justice segment of Bravo podcasts, because that is quite a, that's most of them, isn't it? That's what she should do. But yeah, if you want to torture yourself, go and listen to this interview. I couldn't believe that Carlos, who's usually a pretty smart guy, by the end of the interview, he was like, girl, you've won me over. I predict you're going to be back on the reboot. You should come back. No, he, okay, I'm telling you what happened with Carlos King in this interview. He was bamboozled because Ebony is charismatic. I imagine in person, because she's very commanding and she's done the beauty pageants, she's a lawyer and everything. Also, go be a lawyer, girl. Like, you stop being obsessed with being a house. You could be a fucking lawyer. Anyway, she speaks like a preacher. I think her father was a preacher. So she talks like a preacher. I bet if you're talking to her one-on-one, she probably is very charismatic and you probably do get a little bit entranced by her, especially maybe with the first conversation. I'm sure after you've hung out with her for a while, it starts to grate. But I just think that she kind of worked her magic on him a bit. And I think that because he is a black man in the industry, and when I had him on my podcast, he talked about the importance of kind of like bringing more diversity. Now he, I think he was saying he was the only black showrunner, things like that. So he's obviously really passionate about that. And Ebony talks a lot about that too, which is all great and good, but like, you've still got to be like good for the show. Like, you can't just be there for, because you want to be a voice for diversity. Like, you've actually got to, like, work on the show too, which she does not. But anyway, he got bamboozled by her. My prediction is she will absolutely not be back on. She's the worst. If you want to torture yourself, go listen to this interview and you'll be, like, scratching the skin off your face after 10 minutes of listening to Ebony preach. Like, unbearable. So this is random, but I want to talk about JoJo Siwa, who I love. Now, you know JoJo Siwa, she's like the pop star. She was from Dance Moms originally, and then she became like this huge tween star, and she was known for having the high side pony and dressing like a five-year-old. Now, I've always been a fan of her. I like her music. I like childish pop music. It's why I like K-pop, because I think like that's what pop music is. And I hate pop music that's like trying to be really serious because it's just fucking cringe. It's like, well, I'll go listen to like quote unquote like real music then. Like I'll go listen to indie music. You know what I mean? Like don't be pop music and then try to be serious and like mature. Like no, if your pop music be pop music, if your indie music be indie music. So I like her music. I like her whole vibe, and people have always fucking hated on her so much because they're like, why does she dress like a 5-year-old? Why does she look like that? The ponytail is so stupid. First of all, she's like a multi fucking $100 million brand. So she's making bank off of that costume, that outfit that you think is so stupid. Secondly, what the fuck's wrong with it? Like, she's doing her thing. Like, I think she, you know, I like it because it's individual. No one else has that style. No one else has that look. If JoJo Siwa was out here at 14 dressing like a whore, like just slutted out, you guys would be loving it. Like the people that hate on her for dressing immature would be like loving her for being like totally over-sexualized. And you know what? She only just turned 18. I mean, for years she was doing that, you know, her concept, her look, when she was like 15, 16, that's like still pretty young. Like I know nowadays, you know, nowadays, look, people that are at 15, 16 are getting up to God knows what. People that are 13 are getting up to God knows what. But you know what? Not all of them are. Some of them are just like being young. So I don't know. I just never had a problem with it. I just thought, you do you, girl. No one else has this style. People are jealous. People are haters. I don't know why people are so triggered by the fact that you look like, I mean, you're a teenager, whatever. And she's really fucking smart because I watched an interview with her once. She's like a fucking boss, okay? She knows everything about her brand. She knows everywhere that her merch is stocked. Like, this interview that I watched with her, she knew every store that stocked her various merch lines, how much they're selling, like what the brand message is, like where they're going. Like, you know, she's in every single board meeting and running shit. Like, she is no puppet. She's really, really fucking smart. So stop hating. Anyway, she came out as a lesbian a while ago. Did she come out as a lesbian? Well, she came out as having a girlfriend, okay? I don't know if she used the term lesbian because people don't really say lesbian now. It's like outdated. People say, oh, I'm, you know, I'm pansexual. I don't have a label or I'm a whatever. It's like everything to not be gay and lesbian they come out as, but she's a fucking lesbian. Like, she's a dyke. Like, we know what she is. So she came out as that, and now she's cut off the ponytail and she has a full-on lesbian haircut. And she looks like Pink, which Pink is not a lesbian, okay? Pink has like a husband and kids and everything, but Pink fucking looks like a lesbian, like straight up. She's always had that like butch lesbian vibe. And now JoJo Siwa is giving us butch lesbian. And I love it because the butch lesbian is kind of extinct. Like, I'm trying to think who is giving us butch lesbian now. Like, it just doesn't happen. Like, the only one I can think of is that the person from Orange, there's someone from Orange is the New Black and they look like a guy, but it's like this lesbian woman. And she's from obviously a different generation. Like, people of like Gen Z, like JoJo Siwa's generation, are not giving you butch lesbian. They're giving you like non-binary, like trans and all of those other things. So I just feel like it's like a throwback. I love it. I am interested to see if we stop at this new butch lesbian vibe, or is she going to go trans? Because this is a thing that a lot of people in the gay community talk about. This is like actually quite a big topic, and it's something that a lot of people in the gay community don't say publicly, because if you say anything that can be perceived as like trans critical, you get cancelled. You know, there's that weird part of the trans movement that are just like an insane like cult, and they're obsessed with trans and everything's transphobic. Like, guys, you're not that interesting. But there is this whole discussion that always goes on about like, hey, you know, just one generation ago, all these like sissy gay boys and all these like butch lesbians, now they're trans. Back in the day, you were the butch lesbian at the bar and you were like happy and comfortable in that skin, or you were the sissy queen in, you know, a fucking crop top and with your ass hanging out, and you were loving life and doing your thing. And now these people a lot of these people, not all of them, because some of them actually are trans, but there are a lot of people that then they're going over and transitioning, and then there's a big question in the sort of LGBT community behind closed doors of people thinking, well, are you really trans, or do you think you're trans and you're actually just, you're a butch lesbian, you're an effeminate gay guy, like, what are you? And obviously every case is different. Some of these people are actually trans, and then other people, you know, give it 5 years, they're going to be detransitioning going, what the fuck have I done? So, you know, you can't, it's not like a blanket thing. Like, everyone's different. Everyone has like a different thing. And just given the generation that JoJo Siwa is from, I don't know where she's going to go. Is she going to stop at lesbian, or is she going to go trans? So I'm going to keep an eye on that and see. It kind of reminds me of, do you guys know the singer Charisse? So she's this Filipino girl. Well, she's, Charisse is a, I'm referring to Charisse by their old name. Charisse is now Jake. Charisse has transitioned to Jake. So Jake's a guy now. But originally Charisse was this Filipino girl, and she got famous because she went on Oprah, and they made her like a big, she had like an amazing voice. She was singing like Whitney Houston and stuff, and she became like this sensation on Oprah and like one of Oprah's favorite guests. Then she got a record deal, and they tried to make her a star in the US, and it didn't really work because it was just, it was cheesy. It was like cheesy sort of radio ballads. And then I think they put Charisse on Glee for a while. Then Charisse went away because Charisse kind of flopped in the US and nothing really happened with her career. Like, they really tried to make her, but I guess she didn't have the Rita Ora mentality to go where she needed to be. Then she disappeared, and then she came back as Jake, and now Charisse is Jake, and, you know, living as a guy and looks really happy. I was looking up Jake the other day, and yeah, Jake's doing his thing. But it just made me think of JoJo Siwa, like, oh, okay, I wonder if you're going to transition. By the way, speaking of Charisse, it's so funny to me that Oprah went and, like, found someone from the, you know, found this little Filipino girl at the time. Again, in the past tense, don't fucking tack me for this. I'm like, he's dead-naming Charisse. Like, fucking Charisse, everyone knows that fuck Charisse is just a celebrity. I'm not dead-naming anyone. I'm referring to the past tense version, which makes sense, like fucking reality. It's so funny that Oprah was like, oh my god, we found this girl from the Philippines that can sing Whitney Houston. Like, have you ever been to the fucking Philippines? Like, they all sing. Like, they can all sing like Celine Dion and Whitney Houston. Like, they're just all into that ballad music, and half the country can sing a fucking Whitney Houston song and like kill it and like shut it down. Go on YouTube and type in like Filipino karaoke or Filipino busker or something, and you'll see like all these little like mini philo like Whitneys and stuff. So, you know, not that special. But shout out to Jake, and shout out to JoJo Siwa. We love JoJo. I love JoJo before in her childish gear. I love butch lesbian JoJo Siwa. I'll love trans JoJo Siwa if she becomes Joe Siwa. We just love it. And JoJo's killing it, and stop hating. Okay, so like another thing that I want to talk about while I'm on the subject of discussing things that are going to get me in trouble, we're doing lesbians, trans, BLM. So let's keep this train going. So if you listen to my Patreon, which you should, you would know that I've been talking about this for a few episodes now. I've been following this story of Demi Burnett from The Bachelor. Now, if you don't know who she is, she was like a really big, she was a big villain character from Colton Underwood's season of The Bachelor. Then she went on Bachelor in Paradise, and she came out as like bisexual in Bachelor in Paradise. And then she brought in this woman that she'd been dating from the outside onto the show with her, which is totally against the rules, by the way. They only let her do it because it was a lesbian storyline. She brought in someone that had never even been on The Bachelor or anything. And also, why are you in Bachelor in Paradise if you're seeing a woman on the outside? Because you go on Bachelor in Paradise being single to find love. But anyway, they let her bend every rule in the history of the show so they could have this lesbian storyline. They bring her in. She gets engaged to this woman. It was such a publicity stunt, by the way. And I was kind of loving it because I love Demi. Like, I was a hardcore Demi fan all throughout Colton season of The Bachelor. Love her. Was so excited when she went on Paradise. I was kind of, as someone that kind of can respect a good publicity stunt. I was like, you know, you go, girl, because after Bachelor in Paradise, her season, she was on like Good Morning America doing interviews about it. And I'm finally brave enough to come out and, you know, be pansexual and, you know, live with my female partner. Now, of course, she broke up with this chick a few months later after the show and she got all the clout from it. Then she came back for Bachelor in Paradise again for another season. And on that season, she came off really bad because she was like one of the most popular Bachelor people. But she is a villain. But she came off really bad a second time around. Not bad to me. I was loving it. Like, she was causing so much drama. But hang on. Chunky, stop. I don't understand why as soon as I'm recording, he has to come and start, like, just fucking carrying on. Chunky, sit down. It's like he wants to fucking ruin my podcast. It's so shady. Anyway, long story short, Demi got all this backlash. People kind of hated her. And then she came out as autistic recently. And I found it a little suspicious. She suddenly came out as autistic. And then she started getting all this love again because Bachelor fans are the wokest of any reality TV fandom. And she started blaming all of her behavior, like any negative thing she had done on The Bachelor was because she was autistic. I don't understand social cues because I'm autistic. Like, it's in her bio now, hashtag actually autistic. Every Instagram post is about her being autistic. Now, I've said this on the Patreon before, so I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself for you guys that already subscribed there, but do I think she's autistic? Yes, to a very mild degree, because it's actually really fucking common. A lot of people have, like, you know, very mild autism or very mild, like, ADHD. Like, a lot of people have these things mildly, okay? It's not like a get out of jail free card for, like, every shitty thing you've ever done in your life. And is she milking the fuck out of it to change her image around? Yes. She's been back on Good Morning America talking about her new autism diagnosis. Now, everything's about her being neurodivergent. And then I started, because I still follow her posts, because, like, I was a fan. I'm very invested in her. So I started to think that the posts that she was writing on Instagram were, like, now written in a way, and just, like, the things that she would post and her Instagram stories, they were there to, like, give off the image of someone that is, like, severely autistic, like, severely neurodivergent, whatever the PC terminology of it is. And I'm like, okay, now you're, like, you're trying to act, like, what's the movie with, what's the fucking movie with, fuck, who is it? Oh my God, Robert Downey Jr. and Ben Stiller. And then movie stars, you know the one I'm talking about? And Robert Downey Jr., he's doing blackface in that, right? I can't remember. Anyway, Ben Stiller's character had done a movie where he played someone that was, you know, special needs or whatever. She's giving me that. Like, it's like you're a fake special needs person. And I'm like, okay, so I'm just kind of obsessed with it, obsessed with following her. And now she's launched a new podcast off the back of her new kind of, like, autistic comeback. And the podcast is called Demi Goddess. And of course, it's about how she's, like, autistic and all this stuff. And, like, I turned the first episode on. It was so bad. And literally in her intro, she's like, I'm exploring my life as an autistic woman and newly sober. I'm like, oh God, now you're sober as well. So now we're dealing with, you're a sober alcoholic and autistic. How many more of these identities are you gonna add on? Do I think she's an alcoholic? No. Do I think people in The Bachelor, like, I mean, I can't speak if she's an alcoholic. Alcoholism goes in my family, so yes, I can talk about it. My dad was an alcoholic. I know all about the AA and, like, I know everything about AA and alcoholism because, okay, the thing about people, by the way, this is a bit of a side note, anyone that knows anyone that has, like, gotten sober, that for real, like, all they fucking talk about is they're sober and their lifestyle and how they used to drink and the rules of AA. Like, it's literally, it becomes their new identity. And I guess, like, maybe it has, like, they have to lean into it so hard because that's what stops them, you know, getting back on the booze and, like, ruining their life. So it is what it is, but they never shut the fuck up about it. But maybe she is alcoholic. I don't know, but I just feel like she's just adding things on. I listened to the podcast and it was really bad and I'm obsessed with following her. I'm obsessed with reading her weird Instagram posts, which, oh my God, Chunky, shut up. Can you stop? Seriously. By the way, if you guys think I'm mean to Chunky, I'm not. It's literally just that, like, while I'm recording, like, he starts doing this bullshit. I'm looking at whatever. Go look at Demi's account for yourself. Demi_not_Lovato. She thinks she's autistic. Oh, and she does all these posts now where she has, like, no makeup because she's got no makeup. So she kind of makes herself look less attractive on purpose. And then she'll start, I don't want to say the wrong thing, but she's trying to come off as something that I don't think she is. So that's that. Okay, this episode is running way longer than I intended. I'm going to have to chop off a lot of topics. I was going to talk about what a fucking bitch Taylor Lorenz is. The worst person ever. She's on this, like, pity tour now. I've talked about Taylor Lorenz before. She's on this pity tour acting like she's being bullied and that there's hate against female journalists. I can't even be bothered getting into that, okay? But I did say on Instagram that I was going to talk about it, but I can't even get into the deep dive of Taylor Lorenz when she's literally, her whole career was built on bullying people and canceling people and, like, ruining people's fucking lives. Like, she's literally, like, a bully as a journalist, and then you get bullied back, and then you turn it into this sociopathic, like, victim campaign going on MSNBC about how it's so dangerous to be a successful female journalist at the fucking Washington Post and the New York Times. Please, we're not even going to talk about that loser. What I am going to talk about that's more fun is the ultimatum. We're going to wrap up with the ultimatum on Netflix. Now, the ultimatum is from the Love is Blind creators. You know that I fucking love Love is Blind. I love dating shows in general. And I hate people that won't watch dating shows. It's weird. I always come up against it from being a Bravo fan, because Bravo fans just won't watch dating shows. And it's like, they're so good. They're so relatable. If you actually, like, put your bias aside and then you, like, watch one, they're, like, the best. So the ultimatum, I did not have high hopes, right? Because even though it's a Love is Blind creators, I watched the trailer and the trailer was very underwhelming. It's got Nick Lachey and Vanessa Minnillo, whatever her name is, it's Vanessa Lachey now, hosting it like they do on Love is Blind. And the premise of the show is that they get these young couples, they're all very young, by the way, and apparently they're on the verge of wanting to get married, which I sort of don't believe. I think some of them are pretending that they want to get married. And they're on the verge of wanting to get married, and then one of the partners gives them an ultimatum of, like, well, you need to change this or we're not going to get married and we have to break up. So the thing is, they come on here, one partner gives them an ultimatum, and they're all couples, and then they have to get matched with a different couple in the experiment, like a partner swap. So if there's two married people, then they switch, and then they have to live with someone else and explore that relationship, and then they go back and they live with their partner, and then they see if they've, like, learned anything, but then obviously they might fall in love with someone else, so then they'll leave their spouse for somebody else, and then if you make it through, you get married at the end. I haven't finished it yet. I watched, like, 5 or 6 episodes. First of all, you might be confused of how I explained it. It's a confusing premise, and that's, like, a big no-no, because when I'm watching the first episode, I'm like, this premise is, like, stupid. It kind of doesn't make sense. Like, this would never happen. All of the couples are under 30. Like, I think they're between, the average age is, like, 23 to sort of, like, 26 or 7. So I'm like, they're so young, they don't even take relationships seriously. How is there even going to be any, like, emotional stakes in this show? This is like a Love Island cast. It's just bullshit. And it just seems like a boring version of Temptation Island, which Temptation Island, first 2 seasons of that, legendary. After that, I stopped watching because it kind of jumped the shark. But I'm like, this is like an even worse version of Temptation Island, because you've got rid of the island and all the people in the bikinis and getting drunk, and you've just, like, locked everyone in this Melrose Place style apartment complex, which is where they all are. And you're doing this weird experiment. Well, I was very wrong, because by the end of the first episode, you know how these Netflix shows, because they want you to binge them, they end it on a cliffhanger, so you have to watch the next one? Well, they did that, and I was like, oh my God, because something juicy happened. The second episode, oh my God, the second episode was fucking incredible. I don't want to give spoilers if you haven't watched it, but they did this kind of, they they did like this, they go to a boardroom and they've got to choose like who they want to be with, because the sort of the first episode was all the couples mingling and getting to know each other, and then you choose which other person you want to go and be in this like fake marriage with for 3 weeks for the first part of the experiment. So they have to get up and choose and go, I want to be with you. And there were all these like twists and turns in there, things that I would never see coming, things that like broke the fourth wall. If they produced that, the producers are geniuses, and maybe they do, because I think they do a really good job with Love is Blind. So, and I do think these Netflix reality shows are like very, very produced, very, very edited. But whoever the fuck put that together, whether it was real or fake, I'm like, this is fucking incredible. The next episode lulled a bit, then I got back into it, whatever. It's got a few ups and downs. I'm not saying it's the best show ever. It has very high highs and then it gets a little lame, but I'm trying to think if I recommend you watching it. I think I do recommend people watching it. And I started getting really invested in some of the couples. And there are real emotional stakes in there. And you also are trying to figure out, well, who's just here to be on TV with, and like who's actually in this trying to like do an experiment to like work on their relationship. And then does this person really like that person, or are they doing that for a storyline? And I feel like that's part of watching reality TV now. And I think that the producers lean into that sometimes, where they'll kind of like, they will paint someone out like they came on the show for the wrong reasons and they are just there for TV, and it kind of makes it more exciting, because in a way, by exposing how fake certain people are, it makes the show seem more real because they're acknowledging the artifice of it. Yeah, I don't know. I really like it. I'm really into it, and I'm going to finish it out. I watched like 5 episodes in a row, and I'm going to watch probably the other 4 tonight. Then I think they dropped the 2 last ones. I don't know how popular this show is going to get, because like I said, the premise is like really quite confusing. I think they should have put it under the Love is Blind title. I feel like it should have been like Love is Blind, The Ultimatum, because it does feel very Love is Blind. I don't know. If you liked Love is Blind, give it a try. At least watch the first 2 episodes, because the fucking second episode was fire. If you watch that and if you know about the boardroom scene that I'm talking about with all those twists and turns and sudden proposals, and then this was fake. Oh my God, so juicy. So I really like it. And there's the other dating show that I want to watch, and I talked about this last week, Open House on Channel 4 in the UK. That is the polyamorous show. What are all these shows just destroying people's relationships? So this show is for couples that actually want to swing and want to, so it's a bit like Temptation Island, but it's like both couples are on the same both people in the relationship are on the same page that we want to like have a threesome, we want to swing and be an open relationship. So they put them all in a house, and apparently it's very racy. Now, I haven't watched it yet because I actually got sidetracked by The Ultimatum because it was so fucking juicy. I didn't get around to watching Open House, and Open House is like a bit harder to track down. But if anyone wants to watch Open House, some of you sent me links on Instagram last week after I talked about it. If you just Google Open House Season 1, Episode 1, BitChute, the first episode will come up because I've had it tabbed open, meaning to watch it. So I'll probably talk about that a bit more next week, and I might talk a little bit more about The Ultimatum. But yeah, that's what I'm into. Okay, I think that's it for this week. Is it? Oh my God, I had a lot of fucking topics. And as usual, that's why I need to make more notes, because if I don't make more notes, I just fucking ramble on about things and I just never... Oh my God, actually, one other topic. Actually, 2 other fucking things I want to say. First of all, I'm sick of people acting like it's the first time they discovered that Anna Delvey and Elizabeth Holmes exist because they've watched it on Netflix. Like, this is old news. Anna Delvey's old news. I don't care about the scripted show of it. I don't care about your opinions on Anna. Like, I'm just sick of hearing about people talking about Anna Delvey. You're so basic that you don't even know these people exist until there's, like, a shit scripted, like, Netflix version of it. So I've just had enough. Like, I can't open Instagram anymore and see posts about Elizabeth Holmes and Anna Delvey and Netflix. It's too much. And the other thing I want to talk about was Will and Jada, which it's pretty boring now, but the one thing that I've really noticed lately on social media and in the media is that the tide has really turned against Jada. So everyone's blaming Jada. Because everyone's bringing up all these old clips of Jada now from like Red Table Talk, where she's completely emasculating Will. There's one clip where she jumps on Instagram Live and she's filming Will and she's asking him about, I don't know, marriage questions, something to do with the fucking red table talk. And he is pissed off and he's like, can you not air out our dirty laundry like this? I don't want to be on camera right now. She completely ignores him and keeps filming. You've got to understand that when you're a star, the level of Will Smith, you don't just walk up and start filming them. Like, absolutely not. Like, their image is worth so much money. Everything that these people that are on the level of The Rock, Will Smith, like, who else? That A-list level, what they put on social media is so curated, and it has to be because they can't get into a scandal and like ruin their career, because that's like a lot of money down the toilet. Okay. And there's also a whole thing about with actors that some actors don't like to show too much of themselves on social media because then it can take away from the characters they play, whatever. Jada didn't give a fuck. Jada just cared about promoting the red table talk. And everyone knows that Jada, with the exception of like Booty Call or whatever it is, was like pretty irrelevant. Her music career flopped. She was in like some weird rock band. No one cared. And she became relevant with the Red Table Talk, which is the worst show ever. I'm actually, people are like only discovering now that Jada is terrible. It's like, watch an episode of the Red Table Talk and you know she sucks. Like, this is news to you. Like, where have you been? But she got relevant through the Red Table Talk because she was airing out all of her fucking dirty laundry on there, or she was airing out other people's dirty laundry. Will Smith obviously thought so too, and he had to go along with it, with his thirsty wife. But I just find it weird the way that now we've turned on to blame her for something Will did. At the end of the day, he did it. It's like weird to blame a woman. Like, he got up and hit someone. You know what I mean? Like, is it Jada's fault? Like, not really. Like, maybe she sucks, but that's different. But I don't know. It feels like a deflection. And if you wanted to get really conspiracy theory on this, which, by the way, I don't think this is happening. I'm just going to say that. But if you want to be a conspiracy theorist, you could think that Will Smith is worth a lot more money than Jada Pinkett Smith. All she has is the Red Table Talk, whereas Will Smith is like one of the biggest actors in the world, biggest box office draw, not, you know, one of them. Like, and if they wanted to like save their money, you could see that they could hire like a PR crisis manager and they could spin it to make Jada look bad. So, because Will's the money in the family. So let's put this on Jada so Will can keep his image and then people will feel like they like him again and that it was all Jada's fault. And then he can keep making, you know, Men in Black 5 and taking home, you know, $50 million per movie or whatever the fuck he gets paid. Now, I actually don't think that's happening, but I don't know. That's a fun conspiracy theory. I don't know. It's interesting to see the mask come off and to kind of see the real them. I'm kind of glad that people are like figuring out what kind of person Jada is. I'm over the Will Smithness of it all. Like, it's fun people rehashing old Red Table Talk clips and old social media clips and seeing Jada Pinkett Smith completely emasculating Will, and the dynamics of their relationship are quite fascinating. And as more comes out, it's going to be interesting to explore that and kind of analyze it and stuff. But, you know, I'm certainly no longer outraged about Will Smith. Really, my only thing about Will Smith was like, how were you not thrown out of there? That was the only thing I was really upset about, like, why wasn't action taken at the time? And there was definitely that feeling of like, well, if you were white and you punched Chris Rock, you like, that would have been so bad. But, you know, everyone sort of turned on Will Smith now. I think now it's like time for people to calm down. Like, it wasn't that bad. You know, like, it was bad, but it wasn't that bad. He's been banned from the Oscars for 10 years, which, I mean, is the Oscars even going to still be going in 10 years in the current form of like, you know, going to the ceremony and stuff? I mean, he's won his Oscar. He's got an Oscar. So who fucking cares if he even goes there? The only reason they're even going there is it's part of their campaigning. Cause you know, Oscars aren't real. Like, it's fake. Like, people win Oscars because they take out all this money in magazines to do paid ads. And then they go around schmoozing the voters and sending them gift baskets and like going to like, it's a whole political strategic campaign that costs a lot of money and a lot of effort and a lot of dick sucking. And Will's done that. He's got his Oscar. He doesn't really need to fucking, like, kiss the Oscar's ass anymore. He's got it. He's gone, like, he's gone down now in history as, like, because every actor wants that. And Will Smith is more of a, like, a popcorn blockbuster movie kind of guy. So he's got that legitimacy. He doesn't fucking need to go to the Oscars for the next 10 years. He should have been banned, though. And, yeah, I'm not mad about it. I hope he's seeing a counselor. And, yeah, I hope he leaves awful Jada behind. And I look forward to more of their dirty laundry being exposed, just sort of the dynamic between them and the Scientology-ness of it all. And, you know, was Will Smith gay? And I don't know. There's a lot there. Anyway, that's it for this week. The usual, so follow me on social media at UnpopularJP on Twitter and Instagram. Sign up to Patreon, patreon.com/UnpopularJP, $5 a month. You get some extra content there. Yeah, that's it. Thanks, guys. Bye.